wanted to consider some of the issues of the fasts that we have today and next week and how they relate to each other. Some really conceptual issues that are just interesting in terms of considering the way the calendar falls out this year. That we have a fast day today, Tzom Gedalia, which really gets no respect. I guess we kind of illustrated this point a little bit in terms of getting it moved from place to place. So Tzom Gedalia has been kicked out of its place twice, right? And it's the second day of Tishrei, and but now we have 2 days Yontif on Rosh Hashanah, so we don't observe Tzom Gedalia on the second day of Tishrei. So normally it gets Nidcheh to the third day of Tishrei. But this year, it has bad luck twice, and the third day of Tishrei was yesterday, which is Shabbos, so we don't observe it on Shabbos either, so it gets kicked a second time to today, to the fourth day of Tishrei. While this coming Shabbos, we have Yom Kippur, and we do fast, and that's an interesting difference. I think maybe later on in the week we'll talk a little bit about the particular issues that come up with the coincidence of Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, and Shabbos, but to consider why it's different. Why is it that when Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos, so we observe it on Shabbos, and why when Tzom Gedalia falls out on Shabbos, we don't, so it ends up getting pushed off twice in years like this. So it yields at least two interesting observations, two major differences as to why it is that Yom Kippur gets observed on Shabbos and why Tzom Gedalia doesn't. And that really we can consider three relationships. There's three pairings here to consider. Yom Kippur and Shabbos, Tzom Gedalia and Shabbos, which doesn't end up happening, and Tzom Gedalia and Rosh Hashanah, which doesn't end up happening. So what exactly is going on in terms of those three interactions? So one reason you might say that Yom Kippur is observed on Shabbos is because Yom Kippur is Daraisa. In addition to the fact that it's a Chiyuv Kares, that it's itself called Shabbos, so presumably it doesn't get pushed away for Shabbos, called Shabbos Shabbosom. But to begin with, it's Daraisa. So okay, so Yom Kippur is Daraisa and Tzom Gedalia is not. So that already would seem to explain it. But the truth is, it's not so obvious that Tzom Gedalia and the other related Tanesim shouldn't be treated like a Daraisa. That the set of four Tanesim that we have in commemoration of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, Tzom Gedalia, Sarvateves, Tzivashu V'Tamuz, and Tisha B'Av, so they are all referred to in the Pasuk in Zechariah, right? The Pasuk says that Tzom HaRavi, Tzom HaChamishi, that means Shavuos V'Tamuz and Tisha B'Av, other two fast days, Yu LeBeis Yehuda, L'Sosan L'Simcha. And these fast days will ultimately be days that will be holidays, and therefore that reference gives them a higher status. The Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, we're talking about the Tanaisim, has a statement that when you have Divrei Kabbalah, not a reference at all to mysticism, but a reference to something that is transmitted through Nach. It's in Scripture. It's in Nach, not necessarily in Chumash, but it's in Nevi'im Uksuvim. So then that has a status that's a little bit more than a Drabbanan, even though it should be Drabbanan, essentially. If it was made by men, even if it's mentioned in Nach, so it should be treated like a Drabbanan. Because even Moshe Rabbeinu, if he makes a takana on his own, that has a status like a drabbanan. Like, for example, Hanugeya Tuar Musafta, Sheva Brachas is very possibly in that category, that Sheva Brachas is takanas Moshe Rabbeinu, is treated like a drabbanan. So that should be the status of Tanaisin either way. But when something is mentioned in Nachs, it's called Divrei Kabbalah, so the Gemara has an expression. In Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah and Daf Yiches, it's in a very narrow context over there, but the Gemara says, Divrei Kabbalah ki Divrei Torah Dami. So again, it's in a very specific context, addressing something very narrow, but some of the Achronim had the opinion that that means for all intents and purposes, that Divrei Kabbalah are treated with the Chumrah of Dinim Min HaTorah. So the most prominent voice on this was the Shagasarian. his Sefer Turiyevin, Masechus Megillah, and Daf Hey, so he maintained this, that we're machmer on Divrei Kabbalah as if they're a Dimei Torah. That's what the Gemara means. Divrei Kabbalah, Kedivrei Torah, Dami. We treat it that way for all intents and purposes. So this has big nafkaminas for example, the area of the Halachas of Purim, because Purim is all Drabanan, but they're mentioned in the Megillas Esther, the four mitzvahs of Purim, a few other areas of Halacha, which are perhaps treated with Chumra, even though they would otherwise be considered Drabanan, because they're Divrei Kabbalah. So if that's true, so then the Taneisim also maybe should be treated with Chumra. So maybe we should say that it's not enough of an answer to say Yom Kippur is Daraisa, and the four Taneisim are Drabanan. Maybe that's not really true. Maybe they're treated L'chumra because they made Divrei Kabbalah. Now, parenthetically, you could mention that it's not so obviously true that Divrei Kabbalah are treated L'chumra, that it seems like from a few statements in the Rishonim, you know, the Behuda has a tshuva where he quotes a tshuva from the Ramban, that sounds like this, that Divrei Kabbalah are not L'chumra. He has a suffix there about suffix Nidui is a tshuva about the Ravid and the Rambam in their commentary to the Mishnayos and Mikvos both sound like even Safek Halacha Moshe Mitzinai is Lakula. Halacha Moshe Mitzinai really is a Daraisa. So to say that Safek Divrei Kabbalah should be Lachumra is a big Chiddush. But nonetheless, the Turiyevin was very influential, and the Achronim since him seem to accept this view that we treat Divrei Kabbalah Lachumra. So if that's true, so you could ask, so then why is it so obvious that the Taneisim, the four Taneisim for the Beis HaMikdash, why is it so obvious that they're not observed on Shabbos? Maybe they should be observed on Shabbos like Yom Kippur is. So that involves a question which maybe we'll talk about a little bit later in the week also. Well, so what's the obligation of eating on Shabbos? So is that a full Daraisa? It's also not clear that the obligation of eating on Shabbos, we'll read the Haftorah on Yom Kippur. It's ironic when we read this Haftorah, because the source for the obligation to eat on Shabbos, we read the Haftorah, especially a year like this, we read it on the one Shabbos when we're not eating. Right? The Karasal Shabbos Oneg, it's from the Navi Yeshaya. So that's probably the basis for the obligation of eating on Shabbos. So that's the Haftorah that we read on Yom Kippur morning. So we'll read it this year, the one Shabbos when we're not engaged in Oneg. So that's also apparently Midivrei Kabbalah. So if there's a clash between eating on Shabbos, which is B'divrei Kabbalah, and fasting on the four Taneisim, which are also B'divrei Kabbalah, so why is it so obvious that eating on Shabbos wins? Well, at least it seems to be equally matched. So how do you decide that eating on Shabbos wins? So Michas Chinuch asks this question. Michas Chinuch discusses why it is that we routinely have this situation. Happens pretty often. When Tisha B'Av and Shabbos of the Talmud always fall out on the same day, so when they fall out on the Shabbos, they both get pushed off till Sunday. So why are we so sure that that's what we should do, that we should push it off till Sunday and not observe it on Shabbos? What about the Divrei Kabbalah, which may have more chomer status, that we should do it on that day itself? So the Mechas Chinuch suggests that the Divrei Kabbalah doesn't really require a specific day of the month, right? What does the Pasuk say? The Pasuk just identifies the month. So if we were to push it off a day, like we do with these Taneisim, so we're not contradicting the Divrei Kabbalah. So when Shabbos of Tammuz is observed on the 18th of Tammuz, and Tisha B'Av is observed on the 10th, so it's still in the month of Revi, the month of the Chamishi, it's still consistent with the Pasuk. So in a Hanami, that we don't have the ability to just pick any day randomly in the month, still a Drabanan that it should be specifically on that day. But okay, so that's a lower level of authority. And if Chazal say we should push it off to the next day, it's not going to contradict the Divrei Kabbalah, and that could address it. So just to consider that aspect in terms of authority, so finally Yom Kippur is Daraisa, and Tzom Gedalia, that it should be observed on the second day of Tishrei, or the third day of Tishrei specifically, does not seem to be a chiyuv deraisa. It's also a question whether or not nowadays the Taneisim really are Divrei Kabbalah. That itself is also a question. because that same Gemara in Rosh Hashanah and Daf Yiches that introduces the phrase Divrei Kabbalah Kedivrei Torah Dami. So the Gemara there addresses this pasuk in Zechariah. It says that Hanisim will eventually be a holiday. So he asks the question. The Gemara over there asks the question. So, no, when's it going to be? So when are we going to be able to party on Tisha B'Av and party on some Gedalia? So the Gemara says, well, it depends. That if you have a situation of shmad, if it's a situation of real active persecution, so then the Tanesim are full Tanesim. If it's a situation of shalom, what does shalom mean? That's a good question. Rishonim, not so sure. It seems like it means something eschatological, something Mashiach-oriented, or whatever specifically, we're not 100% sure, but we don't seem to have reached it yet. So if it's a situation of shalom, so that's when the Tanesim are celebrated as holidays. In between, so if it's neither overt shmad nor actual shalom, so then the Gemara says we have an in-between stage called Ratzu Misanin, Ratzu Ein Misanin. That if we want, we can fast, and if we don't want, we don't have to fast. So the Ramban, the Sefer Torah Sa'adam, the Sefer about Avelus, so the Ramban has a chiddush, which the Ran in the Sefer Rosh Hashanah quotes, that the Ramban says, how is it a sick case? Why did it turn out that Tisha B'Av we observe like Yom Kippur? Tisha B'Av is a 25-hour fast with five inuyim and more. And the other three Tanesim, we only fast during the daytime, and we only have one inuy, achil and shtia, which is really one. We only have that one inuy. We don't have the whole package like we'll have this coming Shabbos on Yom Kippur. So why is it Tisha B'Av gets that whole package and the other three don't? So the Ramban says it's because of this Gemara. When the Gemara says Ratzu Misanin, Ratzu Ein Misanin, she says we're in that stage now. That Klal Yisrael is in this in-between stage, and therefore all the Tanesim are essentially voluntary, but Klal Yisrael decided to accept them as a practice. So because it was essentially a voluntary offering by Klal Yisrael, so we're willing to mark these days as significant, but we don't want to go the whole way, so we don't want to have six Yom Kippurs a year, so we accepted the Tanesim in a more reduced format. So because we had control, so therefore we decided how to do it. So then the question about Tisha B'Av, so why is Tisha B'Av still full? Because the Gemara there says that Tisha B'Av is not wishy-washy ever. Tisha B'Av is only one or the other. Either it'll be, God willing, soon it'll be a holiday, but until then, it's a fast day. And the Gemara has an explanation why. If we were talking about the Tisha B'Av now, we'd get more into it. But for now, we'll just quote the Gemara says, the whole of the hoofful of Ahatzaris, Tisha B'Av is more intense, whatever that means, the whole discussion of the Rishonim, but Tisha B'Av has a unique severity to it. So Tisha B'Av is one way or the other. It's either all good or all bad. But the other Tanesim are optional. So therefore, says the Ramban, we accepted them in a reduced format. Now, not everyone agreed with the Ramban, but Tziv has a whole essay in his commentary to the Shiltis where he says he doesn't think this is true. He thinks these fast days were always daytime fast days. There is such a thing. Ramban basically thought that the only fast day we have, really, as a model, is Yom Kippur. So if the fast is a real chiyuv, it's got to be like that, like Tisha B'Av is. But the idea of a daytime fast, a wishy-washy daytime one-inoy fast, so that we don't really have a model for, so it must be that we formed it through our voluntary acceptance. Tziv disagrees with this, but if it's the case, so then maybe even if Tzom Gedalia is rooted in Divrei Kabbalah, so maybe that's not the case nowadays, and maybe it's a Drabbanan today in any event. So again, it doesn't leave it on the same par with Yom Kippur. Sorry, you had a question for?
Yeah.
Okay. So in terms of authority, so that's one area to consider. Yom Kippur clearly is coming from a more chumer place. Of course, even once we establish it's Daraisa, like we said, it's Kares, it's clearly held up as a more chumer day than even other Daraisas. So there's more to say once you call it Daraisa, but certainly it is Daraisa. While Tzom Gedalia, at best you can make a case that it's Divrei Kabbalah, but the Divrei Kabbalah probably does not obligate it to be a specific day of the month. And it's possible that even that is not the full story and that it's really Drabbana nowadays, so we could understand why Onik Shabbos would take priority clearly. There's another issue to consider as well, which is interesting, and if we consider also we spoke about last week, it factors in, that the question could be raised as follows, that you could say that there's something else that gives Yom Kippur a reason to take place on Shabbos that some Gedalia doesn't really have. That there is an interesting shita regarding Asar B'Tavis. The Beis Yosef quotes the Abudrum with a position that's not really relevant to us, but it's theoretically very interesting. With our calendars, it doesn't come up, but the Abudrum held that if it were to happen that Asar B'Tavis would fall out on Shabbos, then we would fast on Shabbos for Asar B'Tavis also. Now again, that doesn't happen in our calendar, so it's not so nogeya. It's a little bit nogeya because the unique thing about Asar B'Tavis, as is practiced nowadays, is that it's the only fast that we observe on Friday. Normally, not only do we not fast on Shabbos, we also don't fast on Friday because we feel that it's going to be a bad lead-in to Shabbos. The Gemara says we don't want to be nichnas into Shabbos manubal, that if we're going to be all bedraggled from fasting, it's not going to be a proper owning Shabbos either, even if we're eating on Shabbos itself. So normally we don't like fasting not only on Shabbos, but not on Friday either. But Asar B'Tavis we do. And Abudrum suggests that even Asar B'Tavis we would observe even if it was Shabbos. So this is a position that's discussed extensively in Achronim because it's interesting, right? Why would this be? I mean, the Beis Yosef, the Abudrum has a reason. It says, because the Pasuk says, Be'etzem Hayom Hazeh. But there's got to be a little bit more to it, the assumption is. So this is one of the most discussed, completely irrelevant points of halacha, because it's interesting what exactly is going on, what's unique about the Asar B'Tavis that means that we would observe it on Shabbos even if we don't actually end up doing that. So among the many discussions, there is a brief comment of Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim has a safe, you know, the way it works is that the Sefer, the canonized Sefer, Chaim al Rambam, Chiddush Yudin Chaim al Rambam. So then the next tier is the Chiddush HaGrach al Hashas. So that, to show that it's not the same Madrega, so for many years that exists only in stencils, so sometimes referred to as Chaim the stencils. You shouldn't think that it's as Chashav, it's as canonized as Chaim al Rambam. So in the stencils, so there's a very brief comment that Reb Chaim has about this, where he quotes the same view from the Bahag. I don't know if there's also a Bahag that says this or if it's a typo, but he quotes the same idea from the Bahag that one would fast on Asar B'Tavis. And he gives you a little bit of a clue as to what it might be about. And that you have to put it together with other things in order to develop it further, but he essentially gives you a clue that when you talk about fasting on Shabbos, so you assume it's not right to fast on Shabbos, but not all fasts are equal. That a fast that's mishum avelus, like, say, Tisha B'Av, which is all about, among other things, but it's about the mourning, the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so that's really incompatible with Shabbos. But a fast that's about tshuva, so that's not necessarily incompatible with Shabbos. We don't usually have it, but it's not so completely incompatible conceptually. And that's what's alluded to. We mentioned last week the Gemara in Tainus that says that if somebody had a bad dream and he wants to deal with a bad dream, so he should fast, and even if it's on Shabbos. So the idea of fasting on Shabbos for a Tainus Chalom, so as he explains, is that a Tainus Chalom, you're going to fast not because you're mourning anything in the past. You're going to fast because it's a kli towards tshuva. It's a method towards doing tshuva. So therefore, that's not so incompatible with Shabbos. Doing tshuva on Shabbos is not so terrible. Being sad on Shabbos, that's not right. But doing tshuva, so that theoretically has a place. Again, it's got the complications, the oneg, the whole story. But theoretically, there is a place for a fast of tshuva on Shabbos. So if that's the case, so then that could also give a little bit more substance to differentiating between Yom Kippur and Tzom Gedalia, because Yom Kippur is a fast of tshuva, and it's not about avelus. And as we know, the Gemara even says it's really a tainus shel simcha, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit more today also, that It's a fast which is, the Gemara says, it's really one of the two happiest days of the year, the Gemara says in Bava Basra. And in fact, out of between the two, it's the one that's more obviously happy, Yom Kippur Slifa. It's not a sad day. So if we say that a fast of tshuva is theoretically consistent with Shabbos, so then Yom Kippur fits the bill. But Tzom Gedalia would seem, wouldn't necessarily fit the bill. Tzom Gedalia would be a day commemorating destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which is also meant to be a day of tshuva, but its primary institution is part of this. There's a lot of analysis you could say. It's written about the Tanaisim nowadays. Maybe you could say it's the difference between when they were Divrei Kabbalah and now. Maybe one is about tshuva, one is more about Avelis. There's a lot to consider about the whole discussion. But it would seem like this is a commemorative fast, which doesn't really fit so well with Shabbos, while Yom Kippur is a different story. So that would explain also, or contribute a little bit to the explanation of why Yom Kippur could take place on Shabbos, but Tzom Gedalia doesn't fit so well on Shabbos. But then it's interesting to consider, so what about the original day Tzom Gedalia was supposed to be? So it was originally supposed to be the second day of Tishrei. So what about fasting then? So it's interesting, if you recall, so we discussed last week that there were six different opinions about fasting on Rosh Hashanah, and there are some views in the Rishonim that you can fast on Rosh Hashanah. There is a view that it's a kedai to fast, there's a view that it's appropriate to fast, not necessarily obligatory, but an option, and there is a view that you could fast on the second day, not the first day. So it seems there actually are three shittas in Rishonim, at least half the shittas in Rishonim, that would let you fast on Rosh Hashanah, specifically on the second day, which is when Tzom Gedalia should have been. So it's interesting that we kicked Tzom Gedalia out of its seat. Maybe we could have left it there. Maybe it could be on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, and he could have fasted then. So if you remember what we spoke about last week, so we had a whole discussion of the fact that the possibility of fasting on Rosh Hashanah is really there as a tool for tshuva. That if one feels that the tshuva that he's doing on Rosh Hashanah is not going to be effective enough, or he's not going to have enough confidence in his tshuva unless he actually fasts on Rosh Hashanah, so then that's the viability of having a fast. So then, like we're saying here, that Tzom Gedalia is not really for that purpose. So the irony would be that if one decides he wants to fast on his own so he could have a more effective tshuva, so then there's a basis in Rishonim to allow that fast specifically, especially on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. But if he's doing it at Tzom Gedalia isn't necessarily targeted for that goal specifically. Again, it's clearly a day of tshuva once it exists. Certainly don't want to discourage anyone from doing tshuva today. Many reasons why today is very mesugal for tshuva on many different levels, but that the Tzom Gedalia is not patterned specifically for that purpose, so then it may be understandable why we don't have it set on Rosh Hashanah, and we end up pushing it off. So I think it's just interesting to consider basically these three different combinations and how they play out differently, how Yom Kippur interacts with Shabbos, how Tzom Gedalia interacts with Shabbos, and how Tzom Gedalia interacts with Rosh Hashanah. They're basically three different conceptual combinations that yield different conclusions. Parenthetically, it's interesting, I spoke about this a little bit on Rosh Hashanah, you know, the whole view of Netaraygon, that you would fast on the second day of Rosh Hashanah is interesting, because the whole institution of the second day of Rosh Hashanah is interesting. Just to say, I'll be Derech HaDrosh for a moment, I mean, it's a little bit after the fact, but that's the whole nature of this Rosh Hashanah specifically anyway, that the whole institution of second day Rosh Hashanah, which is the one two-day yontif that they have in Eretz Yisrael also, is interesting because, okay, so we have a practice of having Evidin Rabbanan to have an extra day yontif because it's Veka Diyoma. So normally, for most Yom Tovim, what does that mean? You just continue your Hanhagas for another day. Okay, fine. And Pesach, it means maybe the most, and now we actually have a second Seder, which is a pretty big deal. Fine. But Rosh Hashanah is Yom HaDin. So what's the second day where you have din again? Did you take the first day? What exactly is the purpose of a second day of din? And especially if you say like this viewer of the Turaigon that you can fast the second day, well that's great, but the din was the first day. So what are you accomplishing by fasting the second day? So you can say al pi derech hadrush that there are different components of din, and that the second day is the day of rachamim, that the first day is the day of the din itself, and then as we move towards Yom Kippur, so we want to have a theme of not so much a pardon. Yom Kippur is a theme of a pardon. We want our errors to be wiped away. And in between, the second day, Rosh Hashanah, has the theme of a suspended sentence. That, okay, we know what we could have gotten otherwise, and we get the point, so to speak. So we don't need to actually receive the harsh din. And that's really the Kriyas HaTorah of Akiras Yitzchak on the second day of Rosh Hashanah. It's really about that, right? Because the shofar that connects to Akiras Yitzchak, the symbolism of the shofar is from the ram that was offered instead of Yitzchak. So basically it's about the idea of a suspended sentence, that what could have happened, instead we have this in its place, we have the shofar in place of the Akedah. So too, instead of the din that we could have received had we not been judged better on Rosh Hashanah, so the second day represents that, and therefore maybe that's the nature of the tefillah. So the idea of fasting, so the idea that we have, some of the nuschos express that fasting has a mentality of ki'ilu hikriv atzmo, that the person presumably becomes somewhat less physically over the course of the fast. So to whatever extent there was a physical reduction, that is supposed to be viewed like a personal korban, the person ki'ilu hikriv atzmo. So it's all consistent with the symbolism of the akedah being replaced by the shofar and the suspended sentence. And so maybe this idea of fasting dafka on the second day has this symbolism. But again, that's still a different conceptual thing than Tzom Gedalia, so it's interesting that theoretically one could be fasting on the second day Rosh Hashanah, but it wouldn't be the same fast as it would have been if Tzom Gedalia had been actually observed that day. Okay, so far so good. So just to mention another point about the relationship between the two, especially this year, it's a little bit more relevant because they're closer together when Tzom Gedalia is pushed off a day, so they're not even a full week apart, the two fast days. So just to be aware, there is a fascinating discussion in the Achronim that there was a Shiler, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank talks about, and many others talk about, that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank is probably the easiest place to find it, in Mikroi Kodesh on Yom Kippur, he talks about this. The Shiler, let's say somebody goes to the doctor, and he asks the doctor that he wants to know if he's in good shape. He goes, let's say, before Rosh Hashanah. He wants to know if he's physically capable of fasting. So the doctor, he's heard of Yom Kippur, like everyone does, but he's never heard of Tzom Gedalia. He's not that aware. So he says to the guy, he says, yeah, you're in good enough shape to fast. You could probably get away with fasting once a month. I wouldn't fast twice in a week, but you should have no problem fasting on Yom Kippur. So now this guy doesn't know what to do because the doctor basically just told him that he's not strong enough to fast twice in a week. So what should he do about Tzom Gedalia? That on the one hand, you would say, okay, essentially he's got to choose between Tzom Gedalia and Yom Kippur. The doctor's basically telling him that he can't do both. So as we've just seen, Yom Kippur is much more chomer than Tzom Gedalia for a number of reasons. So it would seem like it's really not a contest, that Yom Kippur is clearly the priority, and therefore, if you have to choose, well, choose Yom Kippur, and I'll skip Tzom Gedalia. So that makes a lot of sense, but there are those who disagree. There are those who say that that's simply not the way we do things, that Mishnah says we don't try to figure out a mitzvah kala, a mitzvah chamura, that we take life day by day, and so today, so you have a chi of tainus, and that's your chiyuv today. And the fact that it's going to mean that come Shabbos time, come Yom Kippur time, you're not going to be able to fast. Okay, so that's considered to be an onus. That's considered to be a situation of onus rachmana patre, that you're not able to. So you're like any other chola who's not able to. Now you'll say, wait a minute, but so let's say I decide to climb Mount Everest this Friday. I decide to go on some massive fuel and come back 5 minutes before Yom Kippur, totally dehydrated. So then I'll say, well, what can I do? So now I had to eat, and it was platzing. So we'll say, you're irresponsible. Right? Say, how could you schedule your tiyul at that moment so that you'll come back and be in a position of onus? That's not an appropriate thing to do. You have an obligation to not be in that situation. So you'll say, all right, so it's just as irresponsible. The doctor says he can't handle two fasts in a week, so to fast today and then not be able to fast on Yom Kippur, so what did he have to do then? So the answer is that this, if you maintain that that's what you should do, again, it's a big machlokas, but if you maintain that's what you should do, so you believe this is a category called Onus B'Takanus Chachamim, which is a Ksuvus, so the first parak of Ksuvus, the very beginning of Ksuvus, you have such a discussion. And the Gemara talks about somebody who is betrothed, as we talked about the whole relationship between Erisin and Nisui. So if somebody is only has a situation of Erisin, so he's not obligated yet to support his wife, but then a year passes, so he is obligated to support his wife even if he hasn't yet fully married her. So then the Gemara discusses, what if it wasn't his fault? What if he was prevented from marrying her? So one of the scenarios the Gemara discussed, the first Mishnah in Ksuvus, is they had a takana originally that the psula should get married only on a Wednesday. So what if the year is over before then? So he's the honest, but he's honest because Chazal told him to wait. So that's called honest b'takanas chachamim. So here too, you could say that, yes, this person is an honest on Yom Kippur, and he didn't bring it about himself. He was doing it because he was following Chazal, and Chazal said to fast on Tzom Gedalia. So that amounts to a situation of honest b'techanis chachamim. So it's a fascinating shaila. It's a machlokus back and forth. Again, it's hard to believe that somebody's really going to sacrifice Yom Kippur. Also, the shaila doesn't usually come up that much in this kind of a specific medical psak. But theoretically, the question is interesting. It has to do also with this issue of weighing up the different severities of the two. And the question in general, is that a legitimate approach to how you decide halachic shailas? This was a whole debate in the earlier generations of the Rabbis and the Chacham Tzvi and others talked about, let's say you're in jail or you're in the army, and they say they'll give you a furlough, they'll give you a day off. So you can leave jail, you can leave the army for a day, and the assumption is that where you are, you're not really able to fulfill mitzvos in the setting that you're in. So what should you do? If they say they'll give you any day off, so should you say, okay, I'll take the first day off, even though it's a random Tuesday, you're not even going to get a full Shir Shal Yom, and you're not going to get a Kriya Sator or anything, but you'll just take this opportunity to go to Shul on a Tuesday, it's the first chance you have. Or should you say, I'll save it for the big one, I'll wait till Yom Kippur so I can go to Shul then, so let me have my furlough then. So do we say that the imperative is that basically, Ein Ma'avir Nahon Mitzvah, so you take the first opportunity, and that's the only consideration? Or do we say that no, that we do have this quality evaluation and you'll go for the bigger opportunity rather than the first opportunity? So that's the machlokas in general. And it was invoked in this discussion as well, if you're forced to choose between Tzom Gedalia and Yom Kippur. So how do you make the decision? Michael?
Isn't it already a machlokas of the Gemara whether you're allowed to, try and find the Tampian mitzvot?
Oh, Darshan Tanya Dekra.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting question in general, if that's relevant here. So that's as far as making nafkaminas based on the reason for mitzvah. So say, well, this mitzvah doesn't apply because I think the reason is such and such, and it's not relevant here. So then that's a question whether you could say you could apply nafkaminas based on your reasoning, and that's a whole discussion itself, a fascinating discussion. But here, we're not talking about reason so much, we're talking about severity. I mean, we do make decisions when we have a clash between a derais and a derabanan, which happens often enough. So we do have rules for how we prioritize a clash between different imperatives, whether it's derais or derabanan, whether it's any other type of rule. Here, what becomes unusual is that normally, if they were occupying the same space, if Yom Kippur and Tzom Gedalia were occupying the same space, we wouldn't have much of a question that Yom Kippur should take priority. The issue is that since they're not occupying the same space, and Tzom Gedalia is coming a week earlier, in this case, less than a week earlier, so then maybe that's another prioritization role, the idea of Ein Ma'avir Nahon Mitzvos, so how did that factor in, which is going to be our bigger priority. And then in general, there's a question, it's a little bit different, but it's related, that if you have a choice between Hidra Mitzvah and Barova Mahadras Melech or something like that, and other different types of Hidurim, how do they stack up against the principle like Zrizim Makdim LeMitzvos? Zrizim Makdim LeMitzvos is different than ein ma'aviran ala mitzvos, but it's related, it seems. They're both time-based ideals, that you should try to do a mitzvah at the earliest opportunity, you should try to do a mitzvah quickly, however you want to understand it. So what do you do if you have a conflict between Zerizim Makdimim and Mitzvos and another Hidr Mitzvah, which is a little bit of a similar question. Are we interested in doing the Mitzvah at the earliest opportunity? Or are we interested in doing the best Mitzvah or the best form of the Mitzvah? This is actually a question related to Rosh Hashanah. The Gemara in Masechet of Rosh Hashanah discusses this about the issue of why the Tekiah Shofar is later on in the morning rather than first thing. Why don't we say that we should have Tekiah Shofar first thing in the morning, because reason Makdimim L'Mitzvos, so let's make it then, let's make it the first moment. So why do we have Tekiah Shofar later in the morning, during Musaf? So the Gemara says, and that even in the time of Chazal, this was still true, that people showed up to Shul late, people showed up to Musaf time. So we have an Inyan of Berovam Hadras Melech, that when it comes to a mitzvah, so we think that it's a hiddur, that it's nicer to do a mitzvah in the presence of more people. So we have to figure out what exactly is our priority. Is our priority to do the mitzvah at the earliest possible time? Is the reason my theme of the mitzvahs? Or is the priority to do the mitzvah in the most public way, Berovam Hadras Melech? So you have this question in general about trading off mitzvahs. It comes up a lot this time of year. Another way it comes up, for example, is that practice is also right after Yom Kippur, we also have Kiddush Levana to do. So Kiddush Levana in general is done on Motzi Shabbos. So why is that the case? Why is it? What's the connection between Kiddush Levana and Motzi Shabbos? There's no real connection, right? And Kiddush Levana is not about Motzi Shabbos. So the way it's brought down is that we want people to be dressed up nicely for Kiddush Levana. We want it to be treated respectfully. So if we just do it on a random Tuesday night, if that happens to be the first opportunity, so it's not so likely that people are going to get dressed up for a 5-minute bracha, so it's not so likely that's going to happen. So if we do it right after Shabbos, and people are still dressed up for Shabbos, so then it's more of a hiddur. It'll be a nicer way to do Kiddush Levana. So the question is essentially the same one. Do we say that we take the first opportunity, we should do it the first night that it's possible to do it, or we wait until a Motzi Shabbos so that it'll be done more behider, it'll be done in a nicer way. So essentially, it's a shiloh that you find throughout. You can come up specifically with a bunch of applications, Dafka in the Rosh Hashanah and Kippur context, just to make it more timely, give you a few more. In general, this question of a mavirin or Zerizim Makdimin versus doing a mitzvah in the best way is a trade-off that you find in a lot of places, and it's a big machlokas. So I thought maybe you could say a hesber of the machlokas, that it has to do with what is reason. The idea that we do a mitzvah at the first opportunity, the earliest opportunity, what's that about? Is it about that you want to be mahadir the mitzvah? So it's a way to show enthusiasm for the mitzvah that you're doing it at the first opportunity. So it's like hiddur mitzvah itself, it's a type of hiddur mitzvah. Just like you do a mitzvah nicely to show your enthusiasm, so too you do it quickly. Or it's like mitzvah bo yosem v'shlucho, right? That just like you're going to do a mitzvah yourself to show that you care about it, so too you'll do it early. Is that the idea? Or maybe it comes from something more fundamental, that we're afraid the mitzvah is going to get lost. If we don't do it the first moment, the mitzvah is going to get lost somehow, and therefore that's a priority. So I thought it could really depend, because if you hold that the idea is it's a hiddur, so then you could say, all right, it's a hiddur when it's not taking away from another hiddur. But if there are other hiddurim that you're waiting for, so then maybe it makes sense to wait for the other hiddurim to be in place, and then within that to do it at the first opportunity. But to say that you should skip out on the other hiddurim for this hiddur, it's not so obvious why you should do that. Why should you trade one for the other? But if we're concerned that you're going to lose the mitzvah completely, so then this becomes the biggest hiddur, because why should you wait for a bitter hiddur when you may miss the whole opportunity? Better to take the mitzvah now, even if it's less mahudr, and not run the risk of losing the mitzvah completely. So to give another Rosh Hashanah example, or to give a Sukkot example also, it's related, there is a discussion in the Achronim why it is that the practice is that if you have a bris milah, so you have a bris milah any day of the year, so the bris milah is usually after davening is over, so let's say after the Shabbos morning, so you have Shacharis and Musaf, and then you have the bris. So on Rosh Hashanah, so one time it's different. On Rosh Hashanah, the practice is to do it by Tkiyah Shofar. So there's a whole discussion why that is. There's some symbolic connection. It's a whole story. But the Shlis Yaakov has a tshuva where he says that the reason you do it then is because other days of the year, so maybe davening will probably be over before Chatzos. So it still is reason matim in the mitzvos to have the bris milah any time in the morning before Chatzos. But Rosh Hashanah, you're going to wait until after davening. It's going to be ready into the afternoon. It's going to be after Chatzos. So you'll lose reason matim in the mitzvos, so you should have it earlier by the shofar time. So where does this idea come from, which you find discussed in Hilchos Sukkos as well by Lulav and Esrog, that the reason matim in the mitzvos doesn't just mean do it the earliest possible time in the day, but that there's somehow a cutoff at Chatzos. What's the significance of Chatzos all of a sudden? So I thought you could say that if it's really a hiddur, it's not about the practical issue of getting to it as quickly as possible. But it's a hiddur, you're trying to show that it's prioritized. So if you divide the day into two, so objectively, whatever is in the second half of the day is not prioritized. Whatever is in the first half of the day is, on some level, at least prioritized. So there is some kind of objective cutoff to halfway in terms of whether something is prioritized or not. So then maybe at least that type of hiddur is reason, that it's got to be dafka by chatzos, that makes it prioritized as opposed to being in the second half of the day. Hi.
It makes a lot of sense because of where we learn reason from, when it came around the boker.
Right.
Boker is only before chatzot.
Right, the word boker, saying that if you assume that it's boker specifically, that it doesn't. It's interesting, I never thought that way, saying that it's not the Vayashkeim, it's on the boker part. Right? That we could have thought that it's the Vayashkeim that it got up early, it sounds like. You're saying that the emphasis is on the boker, that you didn't let it get to the afternoon. Interesting. Could be. Hi. So we thought this could explain something else also, a certain social phenomenon. Maybe we could explain it from a Lundisha perspective, that if you have a bris milah, so the practice is to have a bris milah usually in the morning, sometimes at ungodly hours, because of people getting to work also, but also because of the reason makdim the mitzvah, so we assume that a bris, like we just said by a shofar, a bris should be in the morning. When it comes to a pidgin aben, is very often in the afternoon. Very often it's not in the morning. So why is it that when it comes to the pidgin aben, we're not so makdish to do it in the morning, and when it comes to a bris, we are? So it could be because pidgin aben also, the time doesn't always kick in until later. It's a whole separate discussion. But let's assume that the zman could be in the morning. So why is it that there isn't such a kveda to do the pidgin aben in the morning? So the Sechemet has a whole Moshe Shmuz about this. He thinks it's terrible. People neglect this reason by pidgin aben, why the only afternoon, it's all a mistake. And I asked Rav Schechter about this once. He said that he thinks that the answer is that it's because of a rovam, that we're afraid people won't come to the pidgin aben unless you have it in the afternoon when they can make it, they're not going to get up early to go. So because, like we saw by a shofar, the trade-off between a rovam and reason, so we want to have it in the afternoon, so people can come. But the question is, okay, so why do we say that by pidgin aben and not by bris milah? Pidgin aben is actually much more rare than a bris milah, so you might assume people will come to that more quickly than they'll come to a bris. So how come when it comes to the bris, that's always in the morning, and the pidgin aben, that tends to be in the afternoon? This just is the answer that Barovam wins when it comes to pidgin aben. Why is it that the way, and when it comes to the bris, the reason wins over Barovam. Now, just parenthetically say, it doesn't win 100%, because most people, when they make a bris in the morning, they don't make it at the Vasikin minute, they don't make it the first minute. They do make a little trade-off for Barovam. They give people a little bit of a chance to get there. My brother actually made a bris at the Vasikin minute once, but it's not the usual practice. The usual, usually you give people a little bit of time to get there. Zanish has a discussion about that. There's somewhat of a trade-off between Jesus and Rovan, but not that much. They don't push it off too much beyond that. But Pidgin Aben, it seems like Rovan wins. So, but maybe you could say as follows, that Nassim Gishtetner, the Chuvus Laharus Nassim, has a discussion about, let's say, I don't know exactly how this happens, but let's say you have a scenario where you have somebody who has two mitzvahs he's got to perform. He has a bris and the pidgin aben. I don't know how it works out, but he has the two that are both his responsibility, and it's not a case where the baby is the late bris of the same baby because the case is the bris was mamas. Somehow he has an 8-day-old baby and a 30-day-old baby to deal with. They're both his problem. So what does he do first? Does he do the pigeon abed or does he do the bris mila? So he says the bris mila comes first because the mitzvah of the 8th day, which is the real ideal mitzvah of the Torah, so that if it gets too late, that's going to get lost. Say if you just push it off till the afternoon and the mole gets stuck in traffic, so you're going to lose the 8th day. But when it comes to the pigeon aben, so the pigeon aben doesn't really have to be on the 30th day. What does the Torah say? It says, mi ben chodesh tipadeh, that from the day 30, that's when the pigeon aben happens. So really, any day that you do the bris on the 30th day at all, it's already... it's reason, because you could do it on the 60th day. You could do it at any point after that. So to do it any time close to the ready is reason. So essentially, you could say like this, that if you say that it's rizus, it's about losing the mitzvah, like we said before, so then it takes priority, because that's a bigger deal than any other hiddur. But if it's not about losing the mitzvah, that rizus is a hiddur, so then it shouldn't necessarily push away other hiddurim. We'll wait till the other hiddurim are in place and then do it as soon as possible. So when it comes to a bris mila, so the 8th day is the day itself, so we're worried about losing that. So zrizus is not only a hiddur, but it's also so that we shouldn't lose the opportunity to begin with. So therefore, zrizus takes priority. It's more important than rovam. When it comes to pigeon aben, so we're not as worried about losing the mitzvah, because if it's tomorrow, it's also good. So it's really more about zrizus as a hiddur, so then we could say, okay, it takes a back seat to the hiddur of bar ovam, and we try to have relatively early, but we'll also try to accommodate the ovam hadras melech, and that's why the calculus comes out as it does. Maybe that's a little bit of a limud zchus on Klal Yisrael, why there is this difference, so we could answer the Steich Hamed's objection. He, for one, did write the whole complaint about this in the Steich Hamed, so maybe this is only the source on Klal Yisrael, why they have approached this issue differently. Maybe we'll just mention it for a few more minutes. There is a topic, again, I think we'll come back to Yom Kippur, God willing, Wednesday, we'll come back to some Yom Kippur topics, but there is a... once we're talking about, we said before, that it would be irresponsible for somebody to go climb Mount Everest on Erev Yom Kippur and then claim to be honest and then claim they can't fast. So that's itself an interesting discussion, that we have a mitzvah this Friday to eat. And this is also an interesting situation, because normally on the normal Fridays, so we're discouraged from eating too much because we need to preserve our appetite so that we can have Suda Shabbos Friday night. So this Friday night is not an issue. This Friday night, we don't meet our appetites. But in general, Erev Yom Kippur, so we have actually a mitzvah to eat. That's the Gemara in the Sefer Brachos. It comes up in the last parak of Yuma as well. And the Gemara says that the Pasuk says that you should fast. Pasuk in Emor says you should fast on the 9th of Tishrei. So the Gemara says, the 9th of Tishrei, is that really true? Don't we fast on the 10th of Tishrei? So, what's Jat? So, the Gemara has two answers. The Gemara Rosh Hashanah says this is the source for Tosefta Shabbos, that you fast a little bit on the 9th of Tishrei, because you add on, you see from Michal HaKodesh. And the Gemara in Bracha says that, Kol Ochel V'Shoseh V'Tishrei, Ma'al V'Kasif, Yilu V'Saneh Tishrei V'Asiri, that if you eat and drink on the 9th of Tishrei, so then the Torah counts it as if you fasted 2 days, which apparently there's some reason to do that. It's not clear why we want to fast 2 days, but if you want to get credited with fasting 2 days, so you should eat and drink on the 9th of Tishrei. So the Gemara Brachos over there says that there was somebody who wanted to do Shnayim Mikra V'Yachad Targum, didn't have time all year, so he thought Erev Yom Kippur, he'd go through the whole Chumash and do Shnayim Mikra on Erev Yom Kippur. So the Gemara says two reasons not to do that. One is that you're supposed to do it with the Tzibur. You should do it together with a weekly parsha. And that you're busy on Erev Yom Kippur. You have to be eating and drinking. You don't have time to be going through the whole Chumash on Erev Yom Kippur. So what's this mitzvah about? It sounds like this is a mitzvah d'oraisa. That's how the Kesef Mishnah has a discussion in his commentary. It's sounds like this is a din d'oraisa, even though the Gemara, like we said, has a different Rosh Hashanah. And Rosh Hashanah is the Chiyuv Tosefes Shabbos, and certainly a Chiyuv Tosefes Yom HaKippurim, that one has to fast on Erev Yom Kippur closer to the day. So there is a whole discussion in Poskim. These two drushes could theoretically be in conflict with each other, right? What happens if it's late in the afternoon in Erev Yom Kippur, and you haven't had a chance to eat yet? So now what's more important, the two drushes that are learned out from the same pasuk? So you have a conflict between eating an Erev Yom Kippur and starting the fast of Yom Kippur early. So then what do you do? Which drasha from this pasuk is more authoritative? So that's also a discussion of the machlokas, the Ksav Sofer and the Machzeh Avram. That's a whole discussion. But why do you have this idea of eating an Erev Yom Kippur? What's that supposed to accomplish? So some of the Rishonim say that, or they sound like, that it's an idea of preparing for the fast, like we said. That it would be irresponsible to go into the fast when you're about to collapse because you haven't prepared for it nutritionally or physically at all, and then you say it's an onus, so that's wrong. So Rashi says you should prepare yourself for the fast. Rashi and Uma says like that, that you should prepare yourself for the fast by eating. And the Rush writes over there in Uma that a Kadosh Baruch Hu shows his chiba for the Jews, that he's like a good, he's not only a Jewish father, he's a Jewish mother also, so he says that you shouldn't be hungry, so we want, even though I want you to fast on Yom Kippur, I want you to eat the day before, so you should be in a good shape. And the Ritva, in Rosh Hashanah, the Ritva has an expression that we're afraid, this really directly connects to what we were saying a few minutes ago, that we're afraid that if you don't eat on Erev Yom Kippur, so you'll come l'day bitul inoy, that you'll come to have to eat on Yom Kippur because you'll be starving. You'll all of a sudden realize in the middle of Yom Kippur, oh wait, I haven't eaten all week. I'm starving, I got to eat now, so that was bad planning. So we don't want you to do that, so we want you davke to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, so you shouldn't be in that state. Hi.
But there were rabbis in the Gemara who had fasted on two Yom Kippurs, suffering the Yom.
Right, so that's a shayla in general. We assume we don't do that. You would think that Yom Kippur would be a great candidate for Sveikid Yoma, because if we have a suffix on Sukkot, so Yom Kippur is before Sukkot, so we should have a suffix then also. So, and Yom Kippur, as we've been saying, is more chamer than everything else, so we should fast 2 days. But the assumption is that it's sakanas defashos to fast for two straight days. Even though they would think there were those who did it during the Holocaust, when they were in exile from the Mir Yeshiva students who were in exile in Shanghai, with Uncle Lovitch, Nechassad Kuvach, who just passed away a few weeks ago, was in Shanghai with the Mir Yeshiva, and part of the time they were in Japan. Ironically, Japan was allied with the Nazis, but part of the time the Mir was in Japan, and Japan is a suffix because the international dateline when Yom Kippur was. So that was a big machlokas at the time between the Chazanish and the Bechiel Michal Tukachinsky, who wrote the Sefer Gesher Achaim. So there were those who were not sure when Yom Kippur was, and who fasted 2 days at that time. So, but we generally assume that this is not something we can recommend to people. It's Sakanas Tafashas. So we don't have a concept of Sveika Diyoma. So you could say that if it's motivated by Sveika Diyoma, then... So then that could possibly be the motivation. It doesn't sound like from the Gemara like that's the idea. The Beis Yosef has a whole discussion about this. Why don't we say, so if somebody does fast on Erev Yom Kippur, so for sure we should say Malo B'Kosov Ki, we fast for 2 days. So to fast for, to eat on that day, somehow it's going to accomplish Ki'ili, you fasted on both days. So some understand that it's so that you should be more prepared, that you shouldn't collapse, like the Ritva seems to say, which is interesting. Then you could ask the question, I think we mentioned already this year, that there is a concept of a siag d'oraisa, it's a concept of a din min ha-Torah, which is there to protect another din min ha-Torah. So you could say this might be an example, that there's a din min ha-Torah of eating an Erev Yom Kippur so that you don't come to lose the din of fasting on Yom Kippur itself. It's an unusual kind of siag, because usually a siag, as we've been discussing in the context of Ksuvos, right, a siag is usually something negative. Here, this is a mitzvah to do something, so it parallels our discussion about whether the chiyuv ksuba could at all be viewed as a siag for anything within marriage. But that's one way to look at it. Within this preparation school, there's another version that Tara Tumima has a discussion, and maybe you should say the other way around, that maybe we want the fast of Tisha B'Av, the fast of Yom Kippur, to be more intense, and that therefore we want it to be a bigger contrast. If you go from feast to fast, it's actually harder, and maybe that's the idea. So basically this one school of thought is that it's there to prepare for the tainus, and either it's by making it harder or making it easier. But most assume that it's making it easier, making it that you shouldn't be in a position of losing the fast because you were not prepared, because you hadn't eaten at all. But other Rishonim, Rabbeinu Yonah and Shari Tshuva quotes all these possibilities, that other Rishonim understand that actually it's a different thing. So we said before, we mentioned in the beginning, that Yom Kippur is not a sad day, it's actually a happy day. Right? So maybe we want to dafka show that it's a happy day, in fact that it's a yontif. So like we discussed last week, that when it comes to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, there's really a suffix that should they be treated like Yom Tovim with a Chiyuv Suda, or should they be treated simply as scary days of Eim Aviyira? So some understand, the Tefi Reim has a discussion like this, that maybe Yom Kippur really is a yontif and there should be a Suda. But we have a technical problem, the Chiyuv Karis that gets in the way of our Suda. So we move the Suda up to Erev Yom Kippur instead. So maybe that's the idea. So if that's the case, so we have these two possibilities. Is it a preparation for the fast, either to make it easier or harder? Or is it there as a Chiyuv Suda to take place of the Simchas Yontif we would have on the day itself? So it's essentially a Nidche, like today's Tainis Tzom Gedalia's Nidche, day fast later. So maybe it's a reverse Nidche that we eat the day earlier because we can't have our Suda on Yom Kippur. So in terms of Nafka Mina, we'll just mention this quickly and then we'll make the room available. But there is, maybe we might continue this topic a little bit on Wednesday. We'll just mention this now as far as it connects. So there is a famous tshuva, Giva Eger, the same topic was discussed by Zav Sofer and a few others, that there was a woman who was sick, and she wasn't going to be able to fast on Yom Kippur. And she asked the Shaila, is she obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? So, as the Acharonim discusses, you see there's really two halves to the question. Right? So the question is, first of all, is a woman obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur? Does she have this mitzvah of eating on Erev Yom Kippur? So that's an interesting question. Well, is it a mitzvah sasei shazman grama? So you could say, well, it depends. If it's a mitzvah of preparing for the fast, then it makes sense logically to say that whoever is obligated in the fast is probably obligated in eating on Erev Yom Kippur too. So then presumably women should be obligated. But if the idea is that it's not connected to the fast, it's a separate expression of simcha, it's a suda simchas yontif, then maybe it is a mitzvah saseh shazman grama, and women should be pturos. Now, what about the question of a chol? If somebody knows that he's not going to be fasting on Yom Kippur, so is he obligated to have a suda on Erev Yom Kippur? So maybe that's also tali, but if it's a preparation for the fast, then maybe you should say, okay, he's not fasting, he doesn't have to eat. Techem discusses that as well. I mean, he thinks that it's hard to say we would really say like that because we won't be miayish on him not getting better. We'll say maybe he'll get better by tomorrow, but he will fast. Okay, but theoretically we could say that if he's not going to be fasting in Yom Kippur, then he shouldn't have an obligation to eat the day before. But if it's a sudas yantiv, then it's not connected at all to the fast, and whether you're fasting or not, then presumably one should be obligated to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. So it comes out, if you put all this discussion together, that this woman in Madashach shouldn't have to eat on Erev Yom Kippur, because if it's a separate obligation, so then it's mitzvah seisha azman grama, which is partly because she's a woman. If it's a preparation for the fast, so that she's not fasting, she's the chol, she's partly for that reason. So it's an interesting discussion. They put the two together, it may come out that way. There are a few other nafkah minas again. Maybe when we come back to the Yonah Yoma on Wednesday, maybe we'll mention a few more just to quickly review the highlights we spoke about today. We're basically contrasting Tzom Gedalia and Yom Kippur and following that whole path. So we talked about why it is the Yom Kippur is observed on Shabbos this week and Tzom Gedalia is observed today instead of yesterday. And we talked about comparing it from two perspectives, the perspective of Deraisa versus Drabanan, that Yom Kippur is for sure Deraisa, not a very Chomer Deraisa at that, but at least it's Deraisa. And that Tzom Gedalia, maybe it's Divrei Kabbalah, but Divrei Kabbalah probably would require it to be on this specific day, and may not be Divrei Kabbalah anymore either. So that's part of the explanation. And then also the question of fasting on Shabbos in general, that maybe a Tainus of Tshuva is compatible with Shabbos, while a Tainus of Avelis is not. So Yom Kippur is about Tshuva. And Tzom Gedalia seems to be less about the Tshuva. This is what Chaim discussed in the context of of Asar B'Teves, and therefore, ironically, the second day of Rosh Hashanah, where half the Shitas and Rosh Hashanah will let you fast, but maybe a fast only specifically a Tshuva fast, and maybe it's on Gedalia, which originally should be on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, doesn't meet that qualification, gets pushed off, while theoretically you can be fasting a different fast on that day. And then continuing the topic of the relationship between the two, so we talked about the question in the Achronim about if you have to choose between Tzom Gedalia and Yom Kippur, because the doctor says you can't fast both, so what do? Do you go for the more chomer, do you go for the first opportunity, and then say Ones, it's a Suba Sugya. And we talked in general about the question of his reason versus other Hidurim, and a couple of other Nafkaminas about that, and then we mentioned that the whole question seems funny, because it seems like you have responsibility to be in good shape on Yom Kippur, and not to purposely sacrifice your Yom Kippur by compromising your health beforehand. So it would seem irresponsible to go on a major tiyul on Erev Yom Kippur and then collapse and feel like you have to eat, or to starve yourself all week on some diet and then say, okay, now Yom Kippur I have to eat. That would seem to be pretty irresponsible. So that relates to this point that we're just talking about now, that actually there's a chiyuv to eat on Erev Yom Kippur. It seems to be a mitzvah d'oraisa. We saw that there were two views in the Rishonim as to why that is. That either it's because in preparation for the fast, most of the Rishonim understand along these lines that you should be in a good shape to fast, whether like the Ritva says you shouldn't come to Bidocha the Inui, or like the Rush says it's an expression of Rachmanis and Klal Yisrael, that we shouldn't be collapsing, or the like. But whatever it is, it's a preparation for the fast in a positive way. Some understand the preparation of the fast in a negative way, that we should be in a more challenging situation by going from feast to fast, and others understand that it's a Sudas Yantif, and the Sudas Yantif we can't have on Yom Kippur, so we have it the day before. So among the major nafkaminas are whether women are chayavos or not. We say that it's mitzvah seisha as mon gram as an independent chayav, or it's connected to the fast, so they're chayavos because they're chayavos in fasting. Or do we say a chola? Should he do this mitzvah, that if he's not fasting, so then maybe he's not obligated to prepare for the fast, but if it's about the suit, then maybe he is obligated. And that if you have somebody who's both a chola and an isha, like the post can talk about, so maybe we could say that she's part of Miman of Shach, because either it's mitzvah seisha as man grama, or it's a preparation for the fast that she's not fasting. Okay, so we'll stop here. So again, we'll return to some Minyan Yoma on Wednesday, and for the next 2 days back to Ksubas, and you should have an easy and meaningful fast. And I will see you, God willing, tomorrow morning.
That's it.